Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back to this week's podcast. And we're going to talk about the real relationships, the real reason real relationships fail. And I have with us an amazing guest that we've been talking before we got recording. I'm like, oh my God, I just want to jump through the screen and like go have, you know, a cup of coffee with you. Dr. Abby Metcalf. So I'm going to call you Abby. Yes. She's a psychologist, a relationship maven, an author, a podcast host, a TEDx speaker who's helped thousands of people to think differently so they can create connection, ease, and joy in their relationships with the people you want, but also with yourself. So Abby, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. We were already vibing, so I'm ready to let's change lives.
Okay, let's change lives. Go. What's the real reason relationships fail? Let's jump in.
Because, you know, for years, I've been doing this now 40 years, you know, working with people in various settings. And I always hear the number one problem in my relationship is communication. That's right. That's what people say. And I have to tell them that's not correct. That the number one problem in your relationship, when you get into a relationship with someone, the biggest problem is actually competition. So we keep score. We keep score. So even in the very early dating, right? Did he text me last? Do I text him? Did someone pay or not pay? We're keeping score. We're watching what they're doing, deciding what we do. We think about, well, I don't want to say I love you first. I want them to say I love you first. Over and over. And then when you get in the relationship, you went out with your friends on Friday, so I get to go out with my friends on Saturday. You spent money on this, so I get to spend money on this. When you have kids later, you know, it's like you took Sophie to baseball on Monday. I'll take Jack to piano on Friday. Like there, I'm telling you, it is, we compete for time. We compete for love, like who's showing it, who's not, how. And it's, that is the problem. When you are with someone, you are on the same team. It is one team. It is a shared battery. And if you start seeing someone as comp, and it especially happens when we're dating, we're guarding our hearts. We're waiting. There's a lot of waiting I've found with my clients.
Oh, yeah. I mean, first of all, when you said competition, it's the first time I've heard it so explicitly. And at first, when you said it, I thought, huh. How so? And then when you say it, you boil it down. It's so true. Even I've been having conversations with my clients this week about, well, I make more money than he does. I feel like he's getting an upgraded life if he's with me. I'm like, oh shit, it's all a competition.
Yep.
I can say I've been guilty of it in my own 27-year marriage. Like I'm doing more across the board. Yep. I'm leading. I'm making money. I am taking my kids. I take the emotional load and I get resentful sometimes. Yep. And when you said that, I was like, oh my God, mic drop.
Yay. Whoa. So think of that, right? Think of how that shows up over and over. How even the, I love the money one because I get that too, you know, dealing with people. I always say this to women, especially. I think we're mostly talking to women, although I know men listen and are out there too. When you make a list, this is anybody, when you make a list of your perfect person, right? Here's my dream person. No woman I've ever met has mows the lawn well on there. Makes even how much money, sometimes women, you know, people will put makes X amount of dollars. They will, but it's not usually the first thing, and if it is, you're in some trouble, and you know that. But even if it makes the list, so what do we have on that list, right? We have qualities. We have always has my back. You know, I hope you have that, by the way. You know, even when we fight, I know that they respect me. They always speak in a loving, often speak in a loving tone. You know, we fight fair. They're compassionate. I know that I'm number one in their lives. So they think of me first. Right? These are the things we write down. But then we start getting weird. The competition phase, we don't. That's not what we're looking at. So when you think of that, I have this story where my tire was flat in my car, right? And New York City girl, I was like, I didn't understand really how to fix that. I didn't know you just put air in it. I don't know. You just put air in the tire. I didn't even know. And Gary's like, you know, you need to get that, you know, it's unsafe to drive. He kept kind of reminding me. And he was getting upset. Like, you can't keep driving with this low air in your tire. What is wrong with you? And then one day I came out and the tire was full. And I acted like he split the atom. You don't even know. Like, I thought this was the biggest thing that ever could have been done, right? Now, how long did that take him? Not very long. And I said to him, oh my God, thank you so much. I was like tripping over myself with gratitude because I was so overwhelmed with this silly task I didn't understand. And I said, what made you do it? He said, you know, I started remembering how competent you are. He goes, you are like the most productive person I know and one of the most competent people I know. So I knew if you weren't doing it, you probably didn't know how easy it was to get done. Like, you didn't get it. And I realized all the times I was telling you to do it, I could just go do it for you. And so I just did it. And that is value. That is more than how much money he makes, how much he cleans gets the kitchen counter perfect, you know, when he's cleaned the bathroom, he's left a full garbage can because he somehow didn't notice it, you know, because this is what happens.
He's a guy. Right?
You know, and this. But we overlook these things all the time. And I'm going to talk about why from a brain perspective, because when you see, okay, let's just go there. When you realize why, you think you're seeing something and you're not. And there's really three things at play. The first thing is something called our reticular activating system, or RAS for short. And this is part of your brain. Everybody has it. The base of the four basal ganglia, blah, blah, blah. Your RAS is a filter between your conscious and your subconscious brains. It's there for the brain's efficiency. So everyone knows what this is. It sends messages from your conscious to your subconscious. Things you're thinking about, it tells your subconscious to look for it. And everyone knows if they've ever thought of buying a new car, you see the car everywhere. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, just thinking about the car. You're like, oh my God, there's white BMWs everywhere. Whatever you liked, that's all you see. That is your RAS, because what it did, it took something you were consciously thinking about. I like the white Tesla, and it sent it as an order or an instruction to your subconscious to look for white Teslas. It's trying to be economical, right? And so if you think there's no good men in New York, all the men are assholes in New York. If you are thinking that, guess what? Your RAS, your conscious, sends that as a message to your subconscious to look for men acting poorly. And not only will it only show you icky men, this is the scariest part, your RAS will filter out anything that doesn't match, again, in the name of efficiency and economy. So anytime a man is really kind, maybe some guy opens the door for you on your way into a Starbucks or something, right? You don't even notice him. He does not exist for you. He's not here in the world. You are only, because your RAS has told you that these men don't count. And I can't tell you how many couples sessions I have sat in and she is saying, you don't appreciate me. And he goes, oh my God. Last night I thanked you three times for dinner. He said, I picked up the dry cleaning on the way home because you had, without you asking, sorry. And I took you for your birthday. We went to a thing. And she goes, literally I've had this, and she'll say, yeah, well that, but you really don't appreciate me. That's the RAS. And everyone listening has had a moment of this where the proof comes in and you're like Teflon for it. You don't hear it. You don't see it that way. And you think you're seeing the truth, but you're actually seeing a skewed version of what your brain will allow.
And so this reticular activation system, is that right?
Reticular activating system.
So it's in your prefrontal cortex, like it's in your conscious brain.
It's not where it seats in the brain, but it's how it works. It's taking these messages from your conscious brain, from things you think, and it is sending them to your subconscious. And we all know, right? Our subconscious is really in charge and drives everything we do. I think everybody kind of knows that by now. So and let me tell you another piece.
Please.
This is a research by Timothy Wilson, who's one of my favorite researchers, and Malcolm Gladwell loves him too. So he's become very famous since Gladwell started writing about him. But his research shows that your conscious brain processes information at a rate of 40 bits per second, while your subconscious processes information at a rate of 11 million bits per second. So people don't hear what you say, they hear what you mean. So when you're on a date and you think, I'm so nervous, I'm anxious, is he going to like me? I don't know. Is she going to think I'm handsome? Or, oh God, I got to talk about, you know, this thing, or I've been divorced twice and I don't want to talk about it. Whatever you've got on your brain. Okay. What happens is you sit down, but consciously you're like, okay, this is going to be great. And we're going to get along. And I'm like, you know, you've probably pumped them up and they're ready to go. Right. And they sit down, but that 11 million, the doubt, the worry, the anxiety, if that is at all there, truly there, that's what the other person picks up on. So you're saying all the right things and they're hearing them, but they're getting a funny feeling. It doesn't match, right? They're getting these words that seem like you're together and whatever, but you're hiding something clearly. And I can't tell you how many men and women I've had say to me, yeah, you know, he or she was really nice on the date. It went well, but I don't know. There was something. I feel like there was something, and like they were hiding. I hear that a lot, by the way. And this is it. They're not hiding necessarily anything, but they are that you're picking up on the 11 million bits. Everyone has walked down the street and seen somebody coming at them, really women, I should say, have seen someone coming at them and you got a funny feeling and you like moved your pocketbook to the other side or you crossed the street. They didn't say anything to you. They maybe not even looked at you, but you had a feeling. That's the 11 million bits. You know, or someone in the office is talking great and saying all these wonderful things. And you're like, that guy's full of crap. You know, like, I don't believe a word they say. 11 million bits. Your 11 million is always operating. So if you're not fully aligned, if your belief system is there's no good people out there, no one's going to really want me because of X, Y, and Z. All men suck. All women are gold diggers, whatever. Any belief, you know, and which is just a thought you've had over and over, which I know you teach, you know, it's just a thought you're having over and over. It's not true. But any belief you have like that, your subconscious is driving that feeling associated with it. We feel the way we think. So anywhere that's a thought, those feelings are present and people pick up on the energy. And so before you go on any date, before you walk in with anybody, it's not just about hyping yourself up, which is a nice thing to do, of course. It is about truly aligning what you believe with, you know, what you're walking into. But I think people are often, you probably experience this. Don't you find that a lot of times people are like afraid to hope?
Yeah, because they don't want the disappointment afterwards.
Right.
Right? They... Yep. And so let's say you are an anxious person and let's say you have these messages. My picker is bad. I'm not good. Yeah. I'm too old. I'm not attractive enough. Now, you know, you're hyped up and you've put your good playlist on and you've got your red lipstick on and you're feeling you're doing everything you can. So what you're saying is if you actually are thinking to yourself, I'm not good enough. I don't know if this person's going to like me. That's what they're going to pick up on.
Yep.
So there's going to be dissonance.
Yes.
Like something was just a little
off. Little off
that person.
Yep. And you felt it yourself on your date, right? You've been there, you've been sitting there, any of your clients or people listening, it's like, I've been on this date and we're really having something, but then I don't know, or he was avoiding a subject, or she didn't give me a full answer on this, or, and we read a lot into it, right? We're like NASA scientists getting the shuttle home, you know, we're like, oh, what does that mean? And I don't know. And I got to figure it out. And, you know, we're really going after it. And instead, if you can just allow, you know, your real job prepping for anything, any dating and at all, is to look at your beliefs and create new ones. So yes, there's a lot of men who aren't right for me. And there's literally billions of men in the world. Like, there's definitely men who could be right for me. And do you know what I mean? Or there's a lot of crappy women maybe, but yeah, there's a lot of great women. Of course there are. Like, something or everything is figure outable, or, you know, anything I put my mind to, I generally have achieved in my life. But the bigger piece is to be willing to risk love. To be willing, and when I say love-based, like, I think of love-based emotions, to be vulnerable, to be open, to be kind, to be compassionate, to bring it first and not wait. Stop waiting. Stop, put it all out there. Put it out. At least they'll either like who you are or not, you know, but better to know right away. This idea that we just only put out these certain parts. Now, I'm not talking about the boundaries of what you talk about. Don't get me wrong here. So, you know, we're not...
You're not advocating for TMI.
I am not advocating for TMI. And that's what's so important. That's what people think for a minute. I'm talking about going in with your full open heart. That is a different thing. No relationship ever in the history of relationships was made better by fear. Not one. You can't have a love relationship based on fear. Like, it's just not going to happen. So why not start off at the very beginning with this candor, with this openness, with this willingness, with this hope, with this sense of fun, with this sense of playfulness, with, you know, that even if you're telling yourself first, you know what, I have a wonderful full life and I hope to add someone, that would be so great. And I'm really okay on my own too. Like, yeah. What if even that was what you said when you walked in? You know, the top of my website says, be with someone who makes you happy. And the with is crossed out, you know, be someone who makes you happy, you know, be there in that energy when I'm coaching clients. Like, that's a lot of what I'm talking about. What are your beliefs? How do we shift them? Because that is how, and it's so funny because my own story, which I was sharing with you, I've met both of my husbands, but only one at a time, not to worry, on both great men. I have an excellent relationship with my father, my kids, my ex, both very long-term relationships with these wonderful men that I met online, you know, that I met that way because I believe differently about relationships. And so I have had great luck. That's what people always say to me. Well, you have just really good luck in relationships. I'm like, not really. What does that mean? I don't even know what that means. I believe in love. I am not afraid to risk. I'm not afraid to go out there. And so that makes a difference with who I meet and how we meet and what I'm open to.
So Abby, give us a new belief. If there's a woman out there who is settling for mediocre treatment in her relationships, right? What does that ultimately mean? It means that in her subconscious, she feels like that's all she's worthy of.
Exactly. And if you're thinking more, you're at, because your friends tell you you're too picky. So does your mother. People tell you you're too picky. Your standards are too high. I hate that. I'm like, what are we talking about? What do you mean too hot? Like, you need to have standards. And again, here's the thing I notice. When people aren't getting what they need, they focus on what they want. You don't need someone who makes $500,000 a year. So that's what you end up, or you don't need someone who cleans the kitchen counters really well. But what you need is someone who has your back, someone who really just cherishes you, someone who values you And maybe not even all the things you value, but values you.
Adores you.
Adores you. Cherishes you. Gary looks at me like I'm magic still.
Decade. Hung the moon. Hung
right?
the moon.
So that's it. But then you focus on, oh, but he doesn't have the money, or he's not tall enough, or he's not this enough. Or do you know what I'm saying? We end up focusing on these things that because we're not getting that feeling. And then it looks like we're too picky. Because if you told anyone, well, I'm just really holding out for someone who really holds me in high regard, no one would say boo to you.
No.
No one would question that.
And what do you say to the person who is not being picky and is settling for this behavior, right? And
yeah.
thinks, well, you know, it's not so bad. No, it is bad. And every person in their life is saying, you need to end this.
Yes.
And it's like, well, I can't end it. I mean, I'll end it when blah, blah, blah. Or when someone better comes along. Someone better is not going to come along.
Not going to come along. There's no room. There's
I'll end it when I lose 50 pounds. I'll end it when it's like, hold on. What do you tell that person? What's the belief?
Yeah. So it's that same, right? It's that is really connected to our low self-worth, right? And to, you know, where else are they settling in their life? So for me with those folks, I do have them write a list of, but it should be no more than 3 to 5 things. And I have even like a little worksheet. Maybe we'll make sure you have that. Or you probably have something just like it, but you know, where I have like what I want in a love relationship. And it's just a short sheet where I know you already do this, but I'm just getting very clear with people on what their standards are. What is the thing that makes you feel safe, makes you feel secure? What is this person saying to you? How do they act with you? You need to feel secure in yourself, obviously, first. But to really get clear, I can't tell you how many people I have who just aren't really clear on what it is they really need. They know all kinds of things they want, but they don't know what they really need. What is that thing for you? I call it your deal breaker. You know, your that thing at the bottom of it all. And for me, it's the team. Like, you've got my back no matter, even when you don't agree with me, and especially in public for me. Like, if we're ever out and, you know, you disagree with something I'm saying or something else that you don't, or if someone's I've been in situations where, you know, someone from another couple was teasing me and like Gary did not play that game. Do you know what I mean? He was not like, oh,
he's not going to pile on.
Yeah, no, you know, in a million years. Or my mother had said some things to me, some icky things. And Gary's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, just shut it down. Like, that's a person that always has my back, right? And maybe later he'll say to me, you know, I didn't love this or that. Or, you know, how can we do that different next time or whatever? But never in the moment, never in that. And that's that feeling for me. All else can go away. All else can be gone. That's what I need, because then I'm good. I can be vulnerable. I can put all myself out there. And there are other nice things. Gary does happen to be 6'4" and has a great body. Like, it's all very nice, you know, but I need that other stuff. So what do you need? That's what I have. Like, what do you need? Not what do you want? What do you need?
And do people have a hard time answering?
Yes. Very much, which is why I have a little worksheet for it, because no one's used I usually ask questions like, when you, identifying what really has been a deal breaker the other way for you, you can often identify what you need. So I'll say to people, when you have left a relationship in the past, or when you have left a job, sometimes it's a job, even if you didn't quite quit that day or moved your stuff out that day, what was it that was like the straw that broke the camel's back? You know, what was it that was the thing that you thought, not, I can't do this another day? Do you know what I mean? There's something. There's always
an inflection point.
Exactly. And when you know what that is, you can often just have the opposite.
It's the reciprocal of that.
Exactly. So for me, it's ever a feeling of being betrayed in some way. Like, you know, some feeling of being, you know, when I did the worksheet for myself, it was like, oh, if I feel betrayed, like you don't, you know, and I was able to come up with the words like, oh, you don't have my back. And it's like, oh, that's what I need.
Right.
You know? So you can do it the inverse way too.
That's true. I was thinking about a relationship I was in on and off again, you know, when I was younger, before I was married. And what was the deal breaker? It was, you lied to me.
Oh, there you go. Done.
And that was it. And
that was it.
Never look back.
See?
Never look back. Honesty is really important.
Yep. And I will tell you, with honesty, I always tell, it's interesting, when we break down trust, right? The concept of trust from in the research, what we find is that there's three things that make up how we trust someone. And that is goodwill. So in other words, that we think they have our best interests at heart. Integrity, that's the honesty piece, that they are honest, that they say something and that's what it is. And always remember, it's also honesty with feelings, you know, that someone doesn't say, you know, are you okay? Oh, I'm fine. No, you're not. So now I can't trust you. And now next week when you tell me I'm beautiful, do I trust that too? I don't trust that because you don't tell the truth. And then the third thing is competence. Are you competent at things? Do you follow through on what you say you're going to do? Do you finish things? Do you keep a job? Do you show up for your friends when you say you're going to? You know, are you competent in the world? Those are the three things. So it's interesting. I have people sometimes I'll say, oh, you don't trust this guy. And they're like, yes, I do. Because they're thinking of like cheating. Like a lot of times we'll trust someone not to cheat on us, right? We don't think that's going to happen. So we think we trust them and we're doubting our feelings. We're doubting. We're like, well, I don't know. It's just something. We can't like name it. And again, this is a good way when you can break down trust into the three. I call it the trust triad because I like little snappy terms for things. But then I'll say to them, okay, so you trust that they're honest with you. But what about this confidence piece? Like when you say, oh, we're going to go out to dinner with the Smiths on Friday, do they show up? Do they remember? When you say, oh, you know, your kid has piano lessons, do they like take that on? Do they remember? Are they competent to be your partner? You know, can they show up in the way you need? Or is it this goodwill piece that they're looking out for themselves more than they're looking out for you? You know, do you factor in the equation? And that, I think, helps a lot of people that I've, you know, in my years of doing this, really helps people go, oh. It also helps in a relationship. Because if you just tell someone, I don't trust you, people get very, what do you mean? I would never cheat on you. That's usually what happens. Or they, you trust them with your money or something like that. That, okay, that's nice. But what's missing here? And that's what you want to talk about. Again, get to what you need, not what you want.
Right.
Because it sets people off in the wrong place.
No, I love that. I mean, we do this transformative exercise with people to help them get into the dating world and prioritize the right thing. And one part of it is, who are the people in your life that make you happiest? We call them elevator people. That's our trademark. Who elevates you? And this, and we have a way of elucidating that in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And that then comprises the new list of people. Now, that's great when in the dating world, right? You have this list, like, great. Yeah, absolutely. But then most people go off and do what they did yesterday and Thursday and mm-hmm. 10 years ago, right? So right. Our job through the process is to guide them to say, is this person in alignment?
Yes.
An elevator person for you. And that's what most people don't realize, because we go back to, but he's 6'4" and he's jacked and he makes $500,000 and we went to Harvard and la, 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 la. It's like, how'd that work out for you over the last three boyfriends?
Yep. Yep. I love this. And you know what's so key here is this idea, like my Gary, who's so wonderful and he's the best. Gary is from like upstate New York where, and is very like, how do I explain? Gary's like Mr. Wholesome, you know, and I'm, you know, and he's very into exercise. I'm always in stilettos. I don't want to exercise unless I have to, you know, held at gunpoint, you know, which I do every day, but I don't want to. I'm a foodie. Like you don't even know. I am like, so I am a chef. My dad was a chef. I cook. Gary will eat five things. Maybe like, could take a pill every day and not eat. We don't have, I love to read. He doesn't, you know, I mean, I could go on and on. We don't, he didn't, he was in the Navy. I went to, you know, Ivy League school. Like we went on paper, there's zero. I mean, there's zero. There's not, and so this idea that you have to all these things in common and we have to like to do all the same things.
And the same pedigree.
Competition. And the same pedigree. Mm-hmm. We got nothing. Our backgrounds with our families, his family had more money than me. Like there's nothing. There's really nothing. And yet we work so, so well. Anyone in the room with us is always like, either we always get, get a room. You got, like we still just are so into each other all these years later. And my ex-husband, which is so funny, was a hippie, like a total hippie. I would meet his ex-girlfriends. They were all blonde, blue-eyed, named Heather, taught yoga, like do not look like me. I was like, how did this happen? But because if you just go with this idea of who you're supposed to be with or having all these things in common, what you have to have in common for sure are your values. I think your humor is the number one thing you have to have in common, like this sort of the same sense of humor and this ability to want to have fun. But mostly you have to want love to be first. You both have to be going towards that, this idea of like this all in, this vulnerability, this we're a team. When you have that, so I go on the Spartan race, he likes these Spartan races, I go to them with him. I travel, I work in the hotel room on my laptop, but I fill the bathtub with ice when he comes back. And I talk about the races, which is, not something I want to talk about. But I've found a way to make it interesting for myself and I get into it and, I talk about the different kinds and like, I'm like an expert on Spartan if anybody wants, but I don't do them. Do you know what I mean?
You're in stilettos.
I thank you. I like the nails, everything, like, no. So, but it's okay. We can, and I'm always cooking and making the stuff. He doesn't care. He doesn't want to eat it. Like he literally doesn't eat half my food and it's really okay. Like nowhere on my list of the perfect guy did it say has to eat the kind of food I like. And I have girlfriends who ask, they're like, don't you miss going out to nice restaurants? I'm like, I go out with friends to nice restaurants. Like I do it, or he'll come along. He's so sweet and he just won't eat. He'll like hang out with me. He'll get himself a beer. He'll like, we're fine. We are fine because we could talk all night, So do you know what I mean? Get rid of this idea of what the checklist is, or really look at your checklist and make sure that it's not, I think people rely on the things in common thing because they don't have anything else.
They don't know what to do. We're never taught how to do this, right? We think common interests, common culture, common religion reduces friction, right? And that's, a wisdom of ages and generations. Like marry, if you're Jewish, marry someone Jewish, marry someone Indian. It just makes it easier, right? Yep. But does it?
Yeah.
There's other things that make it easier.
Yep.
It's not that stuff.
It's really true. It's really true. And you do have to find a place to agree on things. And you could never be with someone who both my men were not Jewish like me. So, we had to agree on stuff. How do we want to raise the kids? What do we want? Do we have a Christmas tree in the house? Like what? We had to agree on things. Totally. But that's part of the conversations you have, by the way, before you get married. I can't tell you how many people I have who get married and then start to have these conversations. But and no, you don't have to have them on the first date. No. Because the other thing that happens is that as you get to know someone, because I have clients, they'll say, well, I just need him to know he's Jewish for the first date. If he's not, then he needs to know we have to raise our kids Jewish. And I'm like, you don't even know what you're going to want if you fall deeply in love with someone. I would have said that too. Like my kids have to be raised, like without a doubt, this is what I need. And if I had had that conversation too early, I never would have had my children with their dad, because he would have been like, no, but we found such a great way to raise them together. When you're in love and you start to work towards stuff and then you really get to know each other and the why behind it. Well, why is Judaism important to you? Tell me more about your religion. Tell me more about what works and what doesn't. You start to have rich, beautiful conversations. And from there, you figure out what the next thing is.
100%.
And so don't get into that first. Like, well, I'm only going to date X, Y, or Z. Because I know. You don't know.
You don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Love it.
100%. I agree with you. I'm grew up child of Indian immigrants. Everybody's like, your husband's Indian, right? Because they assume that. I'm like, he's so white, he's pink, right? I mean, no, he's completely Unexpected package, right? This is when I tell everyone, if you are looking for the things that matter to you, love can come in a totally different package than you anticipate.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it always does,
yep. Right? And see, look how the RAS works in that situation. Look how your 40 versus 11 million bits works in that situation. When you realize that you could open that up, right? That mindset, now your subconscious isn't only looking for guys at temple or mosque or wherever, right? They're also looking for them. You are noticing the man at Starbucks who might have opened your door, you know? You are noticing maybe the guy that took the ticket for your car when you're going to pick it up. You'll start to notice different people. They'll start to come into your view. And you might think, oh, I don't know if I could date a guy who parks cars. Maybe he's finishing his medical degree doing that. You don't know. So if you just write them off, or maybe he's not, but he's like the greatest guy ever who's going to be so treat you like gold. And maybe you'll make the money. I don't know. Like, there's so many things that could happen when you're open and willing, but understanding what you really need.
Amen.
So it's not anyone. It's this.
I love that. And let's talk about boundaries.
I love boundaries.
Okay, go. Tell us about boundaries. Boundaries Made Easy is your new book. Tell us about what does a boundary mean?
Yes.
Okay, because I think we bastardize this word all over the place. And I find, I'll go on my 30-second rant about the word boundaries. Sometimes I feel like it gives people license to be an asshole because they're like, well, that's a boundary. So I'm going to say blah. I'm like, but that's not okay. That's not a boundary.
Right.
You're right.
Oh my God. You're so good. So what I find is that people do that. They'll say, I have a boundary that no one can say X or Y to me. Or I have, or I told my mother I don't like how she's speaking to me. I drew a boundary. None of those are boundaries. Those are things you'd like. Things you'd like. I'd like my mother to talk differently to me. I would like you not to, call me a name. I don't know. Whatever it is. Those are just things you want. And so that's number one. Get rid of that. What about a boundary really is when you take full responsibility for your thoughts, feelings, and emotions, and no responsibility for someone else's thoughts, feelings, or emotions. That's number one. So most people walk through life, I say with so much love, but as victims. This guy, he trampled my boundaries. Well, if you had a real boundary, he couldn't have trampled them.
You would have said no.
Because a real boundary is, so you think again, it's very connected to this, and I do it in the book, right? I have you really get to what your deal breakers are.
Oh, I can't wait to read this book.
I'm really proud of the book. You get to what your real deal breakers are. And when you're there, I have a boundary that my partner always has my back, right? That's a boundary. But that's not even a boundary yet. That's a standard now. That's a standard you have. You have a standard that people treat you with respect. You have a standard that people are honest with you. Standard. The boundary is when you add teeth. The boundary is when you add what you are going to do if this standard isn't met by another person.
Mm.
That's a boundary. And 99.9% of people have no, I don't want to say consequence because you're not punishing people, but a response that you're going to have, some sort of teeth on the other side. I recently had a client who had told her family, she lost a lot of weight. And she sent an email, we worked on this, to her family, said, this is a large Italian family back east, do not talk about my weight. I don't want to talk about my weight or my food. There's so many things I would love to talk to you about, and this is not one of them. So please don't comment, or I'm going to leave. This was Memorial Day. Or I'm just not going to stay. Like, I don't want to have this. And sure enough, she sent an extra text to her brother, who she just knew was going to
violate the boundary.
I'm really serious about this. I'm just letting you know. So when she went, sure enough, about 15 minutes in, the brother said something. And she said, she said, I was very clear with you not to talk about my weight. And he said, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. You know, not really sorry, right? I'm sorry. I forgot how sensitive you are about that. You know, I know. And she said, no worries. You know what? We'll just try this again another time. Picked up her bag and walked out in the most loving, clear way, because boundaries are love. Boundaries are love. If you, otherwise you have a wall. That's how you know the difference. A wall is fear-based. A wall is meant to keep people out. A boundary is meant to keep people in. She loves her brother. She wants to figure out a way that they can all be together, but not this. Here's what usually happens. You would say that all, you do so good, right? Your brother would say the stupid thing and you would go and he would apologize. And you were like, all right, don't do it again though, right?
That's what I would do.
Because now you've collapsed your boundary. Now, because they're apologizing and acting quote unquote nice, you are going to be nice and collapse your boundary because you've already said what's going to happen if they do it. So now they've done it. So you know what happens? Maybe an hour later, your brother says another thing about your weight, or the next time you guys sit down, or when you're now eating, are you going to have a second helping? What are you eating on this diet of yours? They're going to say something because you haven't held your boundary. And she, it's so cute because she texted me after, which my clients don't normally text me, but you know, I always say if there's something real big, you know, and she said, I'm so proud. She said, I feel so empowered. I don't hate my brother right now. Which normally you feel resentful, right? Which, by the way, is not loving to feel so resentful to people because they did this thing to you. It is not their job to hold your boundary. It's yours. And this is the hardest thing for people to get. I understand it's very nice when people respect our boundaries. But if you don't respect them, how do you expect other people to respect them? They will not. So and she, again, did it. So we had rehearsed it. You know, I said to her, what are you going to do? We role played it and she did it. She goes, you know what? We'll have to try this another time. She didn't make a big thing. She didn't make a big fuss. She just, you know, she didn't like say goodbye to everybody. I have to leave because, you know, Roberto said something about my weight. You know, she didn't do anything. She just left. And she said she sent a little email later to everybody like, hey, not sorry I left early. She didn't apologize. She said, hey, I left early. Roberto and I, you know, had trouble with the boundary. We're going to try again next time. Just a reminder to everybody. I'm looking forward to seeing you all on July 4th because they have a thing planned July 4th. It's a very close family. And she's like, we'll see what happens.
Wow.
And there it is. And there it is. Those are boundaries. That is how you keep a boundary. That is how you do that. But this idea that you tell people things, don't talk to me that way, I'm have a boundary with you that you're not allowed to speak this way, means nothing. And by the way, what is this way? You know, the boundary again needs to be very clear around the kind of language. And so I always say, don't repeat a boundary. Never repeat it. Never repeat it. Like, never. So if you say it once, that's why I say this over and over, because people don't hear. They think, I have to give them a warning. It's like, no, you don't. If you've already told them, sometimes we don't always announce our boundaries, right? So you might be somewhere and someone starts to, in this instance, maybe mention something about her food or something and she or her weight. And she could just say, you know what? I'm really not comfortable talking about my weight. My favorite shift, by the way, is to say to someone, I have a brother who likes to talk to me about politics and we do not agree on politics remotely, but he likes to try to convince me that he's right. And so we love him. So when he does this, what I say, I say his name. And I say, I have a few of them. So no brother knows who it is. I say his name and I go, there are so many things I'm so excited to talk to you about. This is not one of them. And I just jump into a new topic. How are the kids? Oh my God, let me tell you what Max did in baseball the other day. I just go with whatever I want to talk about. Love it. They get it. They really do. They want to connect with you. So they will shift. So if you're on a date and someone starts to ask a question and you don't like it or you don't like where it's going, you can say that. Like, you can just say, you know what? We're kind of early on. I'm not going to talk about my divorce yet. You know, if we get a little farther along, we will. But there's a lot of things I would like you to know about me.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of things I would like to know about you. So let's jump in. And if that person couldn't handle that on like a first, second, or third date, I would say they're not for you anyway.
And why are they probing into something that's not appropriate? Make a connection.
Make a connection. Here's what happens a lot. Someone else has poor boundaries with us, or maybe this person you're on a date with is talking all about their ex, right? It's the same thing. When you see poor boundaries coming at you, their poor boundaries coming at you, we call this enmeshment. But when you see, and I'll talk about that in a second, when you see that coming at you, again, it's a good time to go, you know what? I'm going to stop you there very nicely, openly, beautiful heart, you know, lovingly. You know, I'm going to stop you there. I'm not sure I'm in a place yet to hear about your exes, but I would love to hear about why. And then just go. You don't have to wait for what you say. I would love to hear more about your work, or tell me more about, you know, what your favorite, I don't know, what was your favorite birthday? I don't care. Anything
else.
You know, anything else. So you're allowed to steer the conversation. And what happens with boundaries, I put them on a continuum of thin to thick. So the thin boundaries are where we have extreme kind of enmeshment, no boundaries. You know, when people are talking about their sex lives right away, by the way, if you're getting like a dick pic, you know, first date, right. Like this is too thin. The boundaries are too thin. This person is showing you, talk about your red flags. Red flags are poor boundaries. It's the same thing. So you're getting this information and you're getting the ick or whatever. That boundary is too thin. When they tell you too much about their past too soon, whatever it is, right? It's a too thin boundary. Codependence lives there, enmeshment, all that. But we tend to think of this as nice, being nice to people. And that's a big problem, especially for women who always think we have to be nice. On the other end of the boundary continuum are boundaries that are too thick. Like if you ever called your dad, sir, that's a pretty thick boundary. You know what I mean? Like, you know, right? People do, you know, when boundaries are thick is when, and here's what happens. You have a boundary, someone doesn't respect it, and you go too thick. You slam the door, you unfollow them, you block them. I'm never speaking to you again. And I really don't like the cutoffs in that way, because boundaries are a skill and you have to practice them. And you're not practicing when you cut someone off. Right. Now, granted, if someone is super toxic or abusive, that's fine.
Block and delete.
But that's not normal. That's not common. So what happens is you get too thin. I see it all the time. And maybe you've said something too soon, or, you know, you put yourself out there a little vulnerably and they haven't gotten back, and you start to feel rejected and abandoned. Those are always the two, as you know. And then you immediately go to F you, you know, this guy can't even feel feelings. It's like, whoa. maybe you were going a little fast there. Maybe you weren't even fast, but they're slower.
Yeah.
And that's okay too, right? And the biggie here is to remember that there's preferences, not right or wrong.
That's right.
It's not right to want more sex, and it's not right to want less sex. It's not right to want to celebrate Christmas, and it's not wrong to want to celebrate Hanukkah. You know, there's no right or wrong. There's preferences. I like to have sex 4 times a week, and I like to have sex twice a week. So what does that mean? You know, I like to talk about all my feelings, you know, right away. It's how I get to know people. Oh, I'm someone who doesn't do that. So, and I find we do it a lot, especially with introverts, you know, people who are more introverted, I should say, when they lean more that way, they're often seen as, well, you should get out more, you know, try this, like it's something you got to cure. You know, being more introverted, there's nothing wrong with it. It's a preference. It's a way of being. Now, if you're so introverted, again, like way on the other end, that you are so socially anxious, then that's something that should be treated for sure.
For sure.
Right? Super shyness. That's not the same as introversion. That's the same as social anxiety. So that should be treated. But when I have a client who comes to me and says, oh, I'm too introverted and I'm not dating and it's hard to meet people, I'm like, well, let's talk first. You know, let's get in there and see. And I know you do that, right? So let's see what that is. And on the same scale, if someone is too extroverted, like way on the other end of that continuum, what are you doing? Like, what would it be to be quieter? What would it be to wait and make room for someone else to talk? What would it be if you weren't in the center? How does that feel on the side a little bit? What is that like? You know, and you start to have these conversations with people and they start to really understand themselves. It's so beautiful. So if you can go into a relationship like that, not thinking you're wrong, and notice, keep a boundary. If someone says something on a date, like, well, I've never dated anybody so introverted before or something, or, you know, you can stop them and go, oh, well, what is introverted for you? Ask a question. What does that mean when you say that? Tell me more about why you think I am.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Tell me more.
Yeah, tell me more is my favorite.
You know, I was with my clients. The story I'm telling myself is, you don't like introverts, or is this a story that I'm telling myself?
Yes.
Right. And so give the other person the benefit of the doubt.
Yep.
And then let them answer the question. This question has been game changing in our house, even like the story I'm telling myself versus like rushing to make a judgment on something that just happened. Right. Yep. It's like, okay, I have a standard. I love the way you've couched these terms. And so it could feel like something someone did or said violated that. But the first thing I'll do is, if it's not clear, because I want to have good relationships with the people in my house, and I want to be given the benefit of the doubt as well, because they may be in that mode where they're looking at everything negatively because they've had a bad day. It's like, hold on a second. That's not what I intended. That's not what I said, right? So the story I'm telling myself is blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Is that on, or am I off track?
Oh my God. I love it so much. And I'm going to actually segue into maybe this last little thing, like this nugget for people to take away. I talk a lot about not sacking your, I don't sack any conversation or relationship, and SAC, don't offer suggestions, give advice, or criticize. So if you went on any date and didn't offer any advice, any criticism, because it's a criticism to tell someone they're too something. That's a criticism. Like, you're judging it. You know, you're judging what it is. And I always see people say, well, what's left, Abby? Like, I don't even know how to have a conversation now. And it's asking questions. And I call them collaborative questions. You know, so that's what, you know, tell me more about, or, you know, well, tell me more about like this day in your life, or what are you thinking when you're telling me that you X, what do you mean by that? You know, the story I tell myself about that is XYZ. Tell me more about what you're saying when you say that. Can you clarify that? Can you, like, asking questions? It's such, I try to do it with my kids even, you know, where I try to just, my teenagers, that's hard. Try to just be in asking questions, because we're so used to just saying the thing. And I would say, especially with my male clients, this is a really hard thing to do. Men are very used to, I say we love men, very used to giving their opinion, very used to, without being asked, without any, you know, anything.
They sack
all the time. And so what I tell women, and what I've had to train the men in my life to do, is I'll stop and go, you know what? You're coming at me with some, what I'm seeing as advice or criticism. And like, well, I'm not trying to criticize. I'm just trying to help. It's like, well, it's not being received as help. So, but could you ask me a question? Could you help? Maybe we could brainstorm. You know, and maybe you could ask me more questions to understand what I'm trying to say. Or, you know, and I encourage the people around me to ask these questions instead of, you know, that's a boundary in it, but it's really more of like a rule of being. We have a lot of rules of being, and those are good. Save the boundaries for something else. It's not a boundary that he has to put away the dishes as much as you. That's just like a rule of the household. Do you know what I mean? And I would even say, again, don't keep score. It's no one's turn to put away the dishes. If it a turn, you take turn in games. Like, put away the friggin' dishes, you know? And again, are you getting the other things you need? Because when you are, these kinds of things, you will find you just don't care.
You don't care.
You don't care.
Oh, I want to continue this conversation for another 8 hours. Like, this is so fun. So, Abby, tell people where they can get more of you.
Get more of me. You know, really, it's the website, which I know you'll link to, abbymetcalf.com, and the Relationships Made Easy podcast that I have, which is really evidence-based approaches to being happy in your life. in whatever way that is. There's like one coming out this week on how to stop ruminating and negative thinking, you know, and there's always action tips and that kind of thing. So, yeah, so go there, and the website, all links to my social media, my YouTube channel, all the things are housed on my cute little website.
Well, I love this conversation, and I would love to have you back on the podcast.
I would love to be back.
Well, thank you, Smart Daters. Until the next episode, I wish you a week of thoughtful reflection and thinking about your beliefs. What are they? And are you putting, is your conscious putting bad thoughts into your subconscious? And so you're seeing the world in a way that you don't want to see the world, and you're experiencing the world in a way that you don't want to experience the world. And think about what you need in your relationships, right? What are your deal breakers? What are your have to haves? And think about this, because when you think about this and you take a moment to sit down and do that reflection, like Abby said, that's when things start to change, because you have said, stop the madness. I need to sit down and not just get back into the dating pool and do the same thing over and over again. So that is my ending monologue for you. And until we see you next time, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.